Pop Health Podcast is a public service of 24-Hour Home Care.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pop Health Podcast. This is your co-host, Zach Morgan, along with Gavin Ward. We get to do a podcast together again. It's been a little while, Gavin.
Yeah, but luckily not as long as the times before, so good to be with you again.
Absolutely.
I enjoy doing co-host shows with Zach rather than being solo. It's been a lot more fun, I think.
Agreed.
But yeah, go ahead.
So we are on location in San Diego, which is not a bad place to be on location for. We're here for the National Leadership Conference. It's put on by Home-Based Care Events, which is a joint venture between VNAA and their new exciting project called Elevating Home. You're going to hear a lot about that in this episode. Elevating Home is a really exciting idea because the entire purpose of it is to reposition the focus of healthcare within the home. Gavin, I think we heard a lot about how there's a lot of focus on the acute side and how they keep saying that they want things to be focused in the home, but there hasn't been that much focus on it. Have you heard some exciting things at this conference that are pushing things that way?
Definitely. I really like the focus on investment in mental health. Mm-hmm. That was talked about by a group called Magellan Health, and just a great, great topic there. And then also, I really enjoyed hearing, and the audience will hear from the chief executive of Providence Health and Services Southern California about redefining the term discharge and the responsibility we have, not just within the hospital's four walls and not even just within the episode after they leave, but beyond when they leave home health and any type of formal services. So to me, those are some big takeaways.
Yeah, they're going to hear a little bit more from Providence, actually some personal stories, and also not only redefining discharge, like you said, from the hospital, but also redefining what it looks like to discharge from post-acute care, whether that's home care or home health. You also learn a lot more about Elevating Home and how this new venture hopes to really drive the attention there. So we think we have a great episode for you. It's going to be a little bit different from our conference episodes in the past. It's going to be less focused on the conference itself and more on ideas and topics because there were some really great speakers and we're really excited for what we have in store for you.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Thank you everyone for listening and enjoy the episode. I'm joined now by Tracy Moorhead, who is the president and CEO of dual roles right now, both VNAA and also Elevating Home, which was the big exciting announcement from the conference this week. First of all, thank you so much for sitting down with me. I know you have a very busy week going on, but thanks for sitting down. And so that people can get an idea if they aren't here at the conference or if they are, what was the big significance of the Elevating Home presentation and announcements yesterday?
Of course. First of all, thank you for speaking with us. Thank you for being here this week. I'm glad that you've been able to join us for so many of the sessions. Leading up to this conference, the VNAA Board of Directors spent a considerable amount of time over the last 2 years working on a concept of how we can better lead, innovate, and transform the home-based care industry. That consideration became Elevating Home. VNAA has traditionally represented only the nonprofit providers in the home-based care space, and we wanted to lead the entire industry forward. Tax status as a determinant of outcomes for healthcare for patients is no longer really relevant.
Right.
It's really, what are you doing? How are you doing it? How are you partnering with others in your community? We wanted to form Elevating Home so that we could lead the entire industry, but also so that we could demonstrate the value proposition of home-based care.
Right. And so I think it's important to point out, too, because you have dual roles. So VNAA is still staying, and they'll still represent nonprofits, correct? And then, but Elevating Home will be the larger entity that covers both, correct?
You're absolutely correct. Elevating Home is a 501c6. It's more of the trade association model. VNAA will be maintained as a 501c3 charitable organization, so all members will be members of Elevating Home.
Right.
Nonprofit providers will also have membership benefits through VNAA, and we will provide services and educational resources that are unique to the needs of nonprofit healthcare providers.
Yeah. So diving in a little bit more, not necessarily on the profit and for-profit and nonprofit part, but who is represented in this group? What kinds of industries? I know we've heard a lot about home health and a lot about palliative and hospice. You just spoke for a little bit about that also. But who will be represented in this group?
Absolutely. So the providers that we will represent as our provider members are the home-based care services such as home health, advanced illness, palliative care, and hospice.
Sure.
Certainly many of those providers also have other service lines within their organizations, private duty, durable medical equipment, and others.
Right.
We will do some work in those areas, but those direct clinical services of home health, palliative care, and hospice will be the primary focus of our work. But I also want to underscore that we believe we also represent patients, the consumers, and the family caregivers, because ultimately we're focused on ensuring that they are cared for in the location that they most desire to be cared for, where we can achieve excellent outcomes for them, and not just at end of life and not just after a hospitalization, but in a course across the course of the care continuum, whether it's prevention and wellness or chronic care management or mitigation of conditions to prevent a hospitalization in the first place.
Right.
So those patients and their family caregivers are equally important to our provider members as well.
Right. And so for people who might not necessarily understand the significance, why is elevating home such a big deal? Like why? What is the, because there's a lot of excitement about it at the conference. And obviously it's been an exciting thing for VNAA to move forward with. What is it that makes it such a big deal? And it's going to be hopefully such a game changer for the industry.
For me, what makes it such a big deal are the leaders who are involved. If you look at the members of the board of directors at Elevating Home, and this will be available at the elevatinghome.org website, mm-hmm. those leaders have such incredible tenure in this industry. They've seen this industry innovate over the course of decades.
Right.
They've long desired a new focus, a new direction, a new perspective for home-based care. And they have come together in with such enthusiasm and such excitement about the opportunity to re-envision home-based care.
Right.
It's an honor to work with those board members, and it's going to be an honor to help lead this industry forward with their direction.
Right. And like you said, pull together what has been a relatively fragmented
yes.
Group into one voice, hopefully.
Yes. Some of the members of the board of directors of Elevating Home don't currently belong to any other national organization because they didn't feel there was another national organization that represented the perspective that they brought to the industry.
Right.
And so we're fortunate to have had their guidance and their leadership and their input based on their tenure in this industry, their expertise in providing home-based care, and their experiences with other organizations to come together and help form what we believe will be the game changer for our industry.
Absolutely. So one more time, and first of all, thank you for sitting down with me, but what was the plug for the website if people want to learn more?
It's www.elevatinghome.org.
Excellent. And also, you had just spoken a couple of minutes ago in the general session, but you have a couple of other events coming up this year. Financial conference, correct?
Yes.
In the
yes.
summertime, and then a public policy conference in D.C. later in the year. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Thank you for asking about those events. Mm-hmm. We have our Financial Leadership Forum that will be hosted in Minneapolis, June 25th and 26th. Additional information will be on the website. We also have our Public Policy Leadership Conference, and this is where our public policy leaders from our various member organizations come together to communicate that value proposition to policymakers in Washington, both in the administration, on Capitol Hill, and
right.
in other agencies.
Right, which is going to be a huge part also
yes.
of the new initiatives
yes.
here.
Yes, and by then we'll have the vision for the center of healthcare being in the home fully
right.
fleshed out, that we will take that to the Hill and take that to the administration in conjunction with that conference, which is in September.
Excellent.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for sitting down with me. It really was a pleasure to talk with you.
It's my pleasure. Thank you
All
for
right.
being here.
Thanks.
Thanks.
I had the opportunity to hear what is like a TED Talk, in a sense, from Eric Wexler, who is the Chief Executive of Providence Health and Services, Southern California. And Eric oversees six ministries, if I said that correctly.
Yes, you did.
I do some work with Providence, so I'm familiar with it. But for those of you that don't know, the ministry is also a hospital,
right,
or acute care hospital. But you don't just oversee six acute care hospitals. What else?
Yeah, thanks, Gavin.
Sure.
So we have these six hospitals spread out across the LA region, plus several home care agencies. We have ambulatory surgery centers, a huge group of physicians that are affiliated with us, and several urgent care centers.
Great. So I also noticed you brought your colleagues from the home care side, and I've had the privilege of interacting with them over the years. And today, during your talk, you talked about looking at defining discharge a little bit differently. And can you tell us more about what you mean by that?
Yeah, you know, I said that I feel that it's kind of offensive in the acute care setting that at the end of care, we say you're discharged. It's like we now have no more responsibility for you. Good luck to you.
Right.
And unfortunately, care doesn't end at the acute care setting. There's a lot more that happens after. So it's our responsibility to start finding a way to create a continuum from those leaving the hospital to either a home care agency or subacute or nursing home. We have to stop using that discharge word and start talking about how we transition a patient from the acute care setting to the next appropriate setting.
Absolutely. And I know you have quite the wealth of experience working with Tenet in the Northeast, I believe, previously. And I know that's where you're from. So you've actually come from the Northeast to the Southwest. How's the much of a lifestyle change? I know we just passed winter. Was this your first winter in Southern California?
It was, yeah. Well, you know, I have to pinch myself every day to actually remember where I'm living because it's absolutely so exciting to live in Southern California. I love the Northeast, but I spent my whole life there. Here, it's nice because people can be outside so much and enjoy exercise. And by the way, you know, the critical nature of that in keeping oneself healthy and not living a sedentary lifestyle, I think, is one of the benefits of living in a warmer climate.
No, absolutely. Actually, when I first met Eric this morning, I let him know I was born kind of near where he lives, which is Little Company of Mary Torrance.
Right.
There are two ministries, Little Company Mary San Pedro as well.
Yep.
Where my grandparents received a lot of their care. So Providence plays a special place in my heart. And one thing I like about what Providence is doing is you're really looking at ensuring you're not utilizing post-acute providers who don't have good outcomes. In your talk today, you mentioned about looking at your own organization, which has 4 stars, and you feel pretty proud about it. Of course, I know you're hoping, you know, one day to hit 5 stars as well.
Right.
But 4 is still very good. And you mentioned not welcoming providers with a 1 or 2 star. Tell me a bit more about that.
Well, you know, the way it works in home care, as probably all of our listeners understand, is if a patient is in the acute care setting and needs home care, agencies work within the hospital to earn those patients to their home care agency and then to care for that patient at home. The problem that I think we face is there are some of those home care agencies that are 1 or 2 stars rated by CMS.
Right.
And that means that you may not be doing a good job in ambulating patients at home or educating them about their medicine or even evaluating what is a fall risk. And if you're not doing that, it means that the patient is at risk for not getting better and maybe even having harm, ultimately ending up back in the hospital, which is a readmission, and that's not good for anybody. So we are embarking on a process to credential home care agencies.
Awesome.
We will not allow home care agencies that are 1 or 2 star to come into our facility and earn that patient business.
Awesome.
Instead, what we're going to do, understand that, you know, these surveys are directional. They're not perfect.
Right.
And not everybody will earn 5 star, maybe not even 4 star. 3 star is kind of, I think, an acceptable minimum for being in our facilities to interact with our patients and then be able to care for them at home.
I think that's great. I know Zach and I, Zach, our co-host here today, we work with a lot of organizations, acute care organizations, and we don't see necessarily that effort, the specific effort that Providence is making. So I really appreciate that. And lastly, as we end our talk here, you mentioned your mother.
Right.
82 years old,
yep.
Received home health care, and the outcome was great.
Yeah. It was unbelievably helpful. I don't think we could have transitioned her out of the hospital to home without home care. She would have had to go to another facility, and she was experiencing some temporary dementia by being inside of a facility.
Yeah.
So getting her home relieved that symptom. That said, we still, as a family, had to do a lot post her home care coverage to stabilize her. And so that's another message that I gave this morning is, while I need to worry about it in the acute care setting, how we discharge patients and not use that word anymore.
Right.
And begin to start thinking about how we transition them.
Yeah.
I believe that we in the home care space need to be doing the same thing, not discharging patients, but transitioning them to a level of independence. And we just need to do so much more in that space. My mom, I was telling kind of a funny story. She called me up and she said, Eric, I'm having a major problem with these home care people. And
right.
I said, oh, my, well, you know, what's the matter? She said they refuse to clean the house.
Yep.
And, you know, I chuckled. And then I remembered that there are so many misconceptions about what home care means. It doesn't mean you're caring for the home.
Right.
It means you're caring for the patient. So we've got to do a lot more education, both inside the hospital and outside, for the very important work that those that are in the home care space do every day. Essential, more essential now than ever to the healthcare system.
Awesome, Eric. Well, hey, really appreciate you coming by and sharing a little bit of your message that you shared with a larger audience today. We really appreciate it. I know Zach and I work with Providence in our kind of day job almost every day. So really appreciate you coming by and best wishes on the commute back north.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
I'm joined now by Bob Fazzi. First of all, you work for, what is your personal organization called? Fazzi Partners?
So I founded a company called Fazzi Associates. You know, back in 1978, and it's been dedicated to home care and hospice for, geez, almost 40 years now.
Yeah. Well, I had the pleasure of just hearing Bob speak, and he gave an impassioned speech about an exciting new organizational initiative, and actually just new organization that is springing from the idea makers behind VNAA. It's called Elevating Home, and you're one of the founding board members. There are currently six or seven of the founding board members.
Original founding board members.
Right. And so can you give us an idea of the idea behind it? What is Elevating Home? What do you hope to achieve with it?
Yeah. So there's a couple points of it. Number one is there's a tremendous frustration throughout the industry of our that we're just not impactful enough. We're not effectual in terms of what we've done. Some of the things we've done, you know, people really question. And they felt that there's a need for a new entity to really elevate home care and hospice. And a group throughout the country began talking about it. And then ultimately the VNAA took a lead in putting it together. But it's a new entity. It's not a linear growth. It's actually a geometric growth to really a new way, a new approach to leading home and community-based services.
Right. And I think you had mentioned that actually the way it would work is that VNAA would be a subsidiary of this new organization, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. And so we talked a little bit, or the founding members talked a little bit today about what they hope to achieve. One thing that you had mentioned was that there was a lack of exposure on the industry. You mentioned other industries that are getting a lot of foundational money and research and things like that. What do you hope that Elevating Home can achieve for this home-based care industry that some of those other industries have achieved?
Yeah, it may be less about exposure and more about impact.
Okay.
You know, National Association's job is to make things better for the agencies. The agency's job is to make things better for patients and family members. We have not been effectual on the national level.
Right.
And the feeling is by many people, there's got to be a new way and a different way of doing it. You know, the intent of Elevating Home is to bring together a broader cross-section of people, not just home care agencies, but foundations, associations, you know, bringing together, you know, people from different segments of it, all to focus in on the whole mission of really elevating home and community-based services throughout this country.
Yeah. One other interesting thing that you brought up in your keynote today was that the industry as a whole is in an inflection point or at an inflection point right now. Can you elaborate a little bit on what you meant by that?
Yeah. You know, the term inflection point has been around for a while, and it's basically a point in time when an organization reaches a level where the decision it makes on the future is critical. If they continue to go the same way, or do they go in a different direction? It's an inflection point.
Right.
And that decision will have a dramatic impact on what happens to them. The examples I use are groups like Blockbuster. Blockbuster knew that there was a major change going in videos. And, you know, you were probably going to the Blockbuster store, you know, pulling those things off there. You know, but slowly it was changing. That wasn't the market. They knew that.
Right.
But they opted to stay in the same thing. Kodak did it. Howard Johnson's did it. Wang Computer did it. They just stayed with what they were doing. And as a result, most of them are no longer in existence, or they're far less than they were in the past.
Right. You mentioned something interesting in your talk that I knew but hadn't really conceptualized, that the home-based care industry is in more communities and in more places than everything except possibly the post office, the United States Postal Service. And that really hit home. You had mentioned, you know, in Alaska, where the average temperatures are 30 to 40 below zero and nurses are visiting.
In a specific area of Alaska.
Right. Or in times of disaster, we talked about, you know, even in New York after 9/11, or in different places where hurricanes or tornadoes and different natural disasters hit. And the consistency that happens is that the home-based care providers are still going to those people who are in the home.
Think of the most challenging areas in the United States, you know, where people are afraid to go into. Think of some places in Chicago or New York or Atlanta. We go into those homes.
Right.
Sometimes we're going in those homes at night because if somebody needs services. Nobody else does that. And when we had the crisis, when 9/11 happened, our people were going into people's homes, homebound people, because nobody else was there with them.
Right.
They were petrified. Yet the folks who work for our home care agencies, you know, they basically check with their families, and once the families were safe, they were out there in those homes.
Right.
You know, and it, very few people would do that, but they're doing it.
Yeah. Well, Bob, thank you so much for taking the time to sit down with me. I'm excited about the new initiative and to see where it goes.
Hey, we're waiting for you to come to another session, Zach.
That's right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
So we're wrapping up day one of the conference here in San Diego, and I had the opportunity to actually meet someone who I'd heard the name over the years. I am actually in the San Gabriel Valley area quite a bit, and Paul Giles, who is the Director of Finance for the Home Care Division of Dignity Health, actually used to spend some time out in Pasadena, and that's where I knew his name. Paul, thanks so much for joining the podcast.
Well, thank you for asking me.
Absolutely. So during your talk earlier today, Paul, you talked about your role within Dignity, which is 39 hospitals, 20 home care agencies, and 5 partnerships.
That's correct.
Wow. That's quite a big system.
Yeah, it's quite a variety there.
Yeah, and on the way down to record, you mentioned you've been flying quite a bit to support all of these folks. And tell me a little bit about, I know about the 20 home care agencies that are Dignity owned and operated, correct?
Yes.
Tell the audience a little bit about the 5 partnerships.
Well, the partnerships, we have a little bit of variety there of what the partnerships mean. Because of the different relationships, legal relationships that we have, these are joint ventures primarily.
Okay.
Where Dignity Health will own a percentage of those organizations. For example, we have a pretty large one called Pathways Home Health and Hospice, located in Sunnyvale, California.
Okay, so up north.
And that is a 50-50% relationship with another hospital system.
Okay,
and
it happens to be
a county-based hospital. So, so it's Sequoia Hospital up north. Actually owns 50% of that organization. So we have you know, these affiliations, but that's one of those partnerships.
Great. Well, appreciate that. As Paul and I were walking down to record, I mentioned I'd done some work with Catholic Healthcare West, which would you call it the former name of Dignity, or how would you define that?
Yes, I would say a little bit more than 4 years ago, the name was changed from Catholic Healthcare West to Dignity Health.
Okay, very good. And then Dignity Health, can you remind the audience or let them know, in case they're not familiar, besides California where we're recording, where else does Dignity have a presence?
Well, Dignity Health has hospitals in Nevada and Arizona as well.
Okay.
But we do have even healthcare relationships in other states now. So we're pretty much national.
Okay.
In different areas, but in terms of the hospitals, the acute care hospitals, it's just the 3 states.
Okay, and does the home care support all 3 of those states?
Well, 2 of the 3. We have a home health agency in Henderson, Nevada, kind of the Las Vegas, Clark County market. Nothing in Arizona right now, although we are kind of looking at a possibility there for home care in Arizona as well, but everything else is in California.
Okay. great. And I know you're based, you support all of the locations and do some flying, but you're based in Orange County.
Yes.
And one thing that I really wanted to focus on with you, Paul, was your lessons learned as you explored bundles within your system. Could you briefly talk about maybe some of the things you've learned as you interviewed folks within your hospital about bundles and how home care can support the bundles?
Absolutely. I think with the bundled, it put a major emphasis on the value of post-acute care, or PAC, as you might see it in a lot of what's been written up, and what they can do for discharging patients earlier out of the acute care facility. We know acute care is very, very expensive, and that home care is less expensive. So, you know, more emphasis in that area has been, I think, very helpful to the hospital, and certainly has increased the business for the home care operations within Dignity Health. So it's been very positive there. It's increased and improved the relationships with care coordination in the hospitals. So it's very important to know and understand the needs of each patient, and to be able to communicate with your home care department, with what the hospital wants to try to achieve, very important, so that that transition of care happens very easily and quickly and efficiently.
Very good, Paul. We'll appreciate you sharing. For the folks out there, you may hear some background noise. The day's event is coming to a close. There'll be a networking reception, and we have another half day or so tomorrow. And luckily for us, Paul and myself, it's not too bad of a commute home, hopefully, tomorrow while some folks are flying across the country. So again, Paul Giles, the Director of Finance with the Home Care Department of Dignity Health, has joined us. Paul, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you again.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm joined now by Holly Chafee and Debbie Plesich. Holly works for Porchlight V&A in Massachusetts, correct?
That's correct.
And what do you do at Porchlight?
I'm the president and CEO of Porchlight V&A and Home Care, and we serve three counties in Western Mass, Berkshire, Hamden, and Hampshire counties.
Okay.
And we're a full-service organization from acute to chronic care.
Oh, excellent. And Debbie, you work for Corridor, right? Okay. Just recently moved to South Carolina from California, a little bit different, but what do you do at Corridor?
At Corridor, I am actually in charge of corporate compliance and regulatory consulting. Corridor is a post-acute provider, business partner with post-acute providers. So we provide revenue cycle management, coding resources, a lot of education platforms, and education on compliance and regulatory affairs.
Okay. And it seems like an outside pairing, but the two of you are actually here working together. You're speaking together, correct?
Correct.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm a provider of home care services, and we collaborate together. Corridor Group does our billing, our coding, our outsource of coding. And we also participate in their eChecks learning system, which helps our clinicians to be able to do online classes at their convenience.
Perfect. And that kind of ties into what you're speaking about. So can you give us an idea of what the topic is for your talk
today? Our topic today is on the evolving changes of corporate compliance world as mandated by the government, the federal government. So there have been a lot of recent updates by the OIG, Office of Inspector General, and the DOJ, which everybody hears about, Department of Justice. And a lot of these new and current changes are requiring the healthcare providers to make their compliance programs more robust and a lot more attention to detail.
Yeah.
So there's a lot more required of the board of directors of companies to become involved with their compliance. Compliance has to do with the anti-kickback laws, the Stark laws.
Right.
Conditions of participation, all of that has to do with compliance and making sure that the providers, home health agencies, are making sure their patients are homebound. That all has to do with compliance and length of stays. So our talk today is on the recent evolving changes and what the federal government is finding on their investigations.
And is it going to be mostly home health focused, or is it for other healthcare organizations as well?
Well, we're post-acute providers, so the focus is mostly on board of directors for home health and hospice agencies.
Yeah. And just before we get into the practical application of it, just for people who might not know, can you explain Stark laws?
Sure. Stark laws means basically that a physician, a referral group, cannot pay somebody to give a referral to a home health or a hospice agency.
Right. And it is the law that is most commonly cited for marketers or different things like that not being able to bring food or coffee or those kinds of things.
Some of the recent findings have actually put a dollar amount on what they consider to be an appropriate amount spent for an office lunch. And if it's too much, it's considered a kickback.
Right, right. So on kind of the practical application of what you are talking on today, what does it mean for the frontline staff or for the people who are in the field with these different compliance issues?
Sure. So out in the field, there are home health aides, physical therapists, registered nurses, social workers. And for them, what they need to know that if they think that there's some fraudulent activity going on, whether it's with a fellow clinician or whether it's in the internal office, if people are doing too many visits or people are saying they're doing visits and documenting and not actually doing them, those kinds of things, they need to know that they can report those and not have any ramifications for that. So that's the purpose of boosting up the compliance program so that they have an opportunity to report these without any kind of problem.
Right.
So there's a hotline. There's a compliance officer. There's a compliance team. And usually the compliance officer is somebody that's not on the management team so that there are, you know, no chances of any type of collusion.
Right. Just one last thing, and thank you both for stopping by and sitting down. Just really briefly, I think that one of the things that you're all talking about, but that people get confused about, with the Stark laws, with these compliance things, it does not mean that marketers cannot still go in and do their jobs, right? Because I think that people get confused with that sometimes, marketers or reps, representatives, whatever they are called, because I think people a lot of times are so worried about, say, the Stark laws or things like that, that they go all the way to the other side. But that is a necessary step, and they are allowed to do a certain range of things, right?
Absolutely. And many marketers, they're also called community liaisons,
right,
provide a very, very valuable asset to our communities because they're going into these physicians' offices and they don't know what home health is about. The front office people in the doctor's office, even many of our physicians, they have their specialties. They have no idea what goes on in home care and what our requirements are.
Right.
So many of them provide these lunches and their forms of education for these teams.
Right. Excellent. Well, thank you both. Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So one of the really important things about marketers today or liaisons is that we need to have a smooth transition of care from hospital to home,
right,
from nursing home to home, you know, and even from a doctor's office to home or from an urgent care center to home. And so those kinds of things are so important for the marketing and liaisons to be involved with.
Right. And like you said, you know, a physician is obviously an expert in their field, but they might not be an expert in all of those post-acute. So someone has to be that expert to bridge that gap, like what you said. Well, thank you both so much for sitting down and chatting with me. I'm looking forward to your talk today.
Great. Thank you.
Right, thanks.
Well, really hope you guys enjoyed the episode. Again, as Zach shared in the introduction to today's episode, today's was more on content and a mini TED Talk, in a sense,
right,
from each of the speakers. And we feel that was a great way to share their message to you if you couldn't be at the conference. And we're actually looking forward to perhaps having these folks on for a full episode,
right,
to learn more about their organizations and what they're sharing. And we really enjoyed our time in San Diego. I know, Zach, both you and I had a good time getting to know these folks, spent some time at the conference and afterwards in the evening as well.
Right. Yeah, and a really great conference put on. If you're interested at all in either Elevating Home or VNAA, check them out online. As Tracy mentioned, they have a couple of other conferences coming up later this year, both on financial literacy in post-acute and also public policy in post-acute coming up. So if you like what you heard today, please check them out online. And a big shout out to the organizations for having us here. We had a great time, and we hope you enjoyed the episode.